This episode is brought to you by SD Sober Living. If you or someone you know needs a safe, supportive recovery home, then reach out to SD Sober Living at www.sdsoberliving.org or call 619-334-9869. That's 619-334-9869. Come get some fuck fentanyl and some San Diego recovery at SD Sober Living.
Don't look at me.
Christina Aguilera. A throwback right there.
Yeah, you know it.
I'm Luis Romero. I'm the Fuck Fentanyl guy. And this is the Fuck Fentanyl podcast. Today, I got my really fucking awesome friend, Amy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on. Pretty nervous.
No, it's all good.
But I'm excited and I'm ready.
Hell yeah.
Thank you.
So let's point out this real fact real quick. So Amy's the youngest person to be on this podcast. How old are you?
I'm 21 years old.
Wow.
I just turned 21.
Yeah. That's fucking awesome. And already in recovery.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where are you from, Amy?
So I was born and raised in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
North County area is where
I grew up.
Yeah.
Oh, what part of North County?
Vista, Oceanside. Oh. Well, I was born in Oceanside, raised in Vista, and I lived there all my life up to like 20. And then I moved up here for my recovery, and
I'm resigning
here right now, and it's been pretty good for me lately. So,
do you feel like it helps you out a lot from getting out of the North County area?
Definitely,
so you can just focus on yourself.
Yeah, I feel like I do have more good friends and influences here, and it got me away from like trigger areas and like I don't know where, you know, there's drugs everywhere, but, you know, I came here to focus on my recovery and get clean and get away from that. So I feel like I've set up a good foundation here for that. And
awesome.
I like it. I go to meetings here and like I have a good support system up here. And yeah, it's definitely helped me a lot, you know. So
that's so awesome. And how was your life like growing up?
My life, I'm going to be honest, I had a pretty good, really supportive family growing up.
Mm-hmm.
My family took well care of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like at the time, I saw it more as them being too strict or too protective. And, but they were really supportive and they still are very supportive. And mm-hmm. I grew up with being the oldest.
Okay.
I have two little brothers.
Okay.
One's 2 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. One is, he just turned 10.
Okay.
So yeah, I had a good childhood growing up. You know, obviously there was setbacks and
mm-hmm.
You know, things that happened that I feel like kind of, you know, shaped me into the person I am today and the things that I've been through. But for the most part, I feel like my childhood was pretty good growing up.
Oh, nice.
There was something I went through that did kind of shake that my childhood.
Okay.
We had my uncle living with us, and he sexually assaulted me.
Oh my God! Really?
Well, he molested me basically.
Okay.
And that was from the age of 8 to 10.
Oh my God.
So that really...
Reoccurring?
Yeah, reoccurring.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, we really trusted him. And that is where I feel like I started being more angry and like
worse.
Upset and just rebelling in a way. And that really should, like, you know, it happened from 8 to 10, you know, but the years after that is when it like really started to, thankfully I did something about it. I told my parents and they were really supportive. And
At 10 years old?
Yeah. I was like 10, maybe turning 11 or 12. And like, turning 11. And like for a time there, I didn't really want to do anything about it because I was just scared. And like, you know, I loved my uncle. Uh-huh. He was my uncle, and I didn't want anything to happen to him. I didn't want him to get in trouble. I didn't want my family going through stress or
felt like it was a burden at the time.
That's how I felt. But by the time I think I was like, you know, entering middle school, I started to like, you know, go through puberty and like learn that, you know, that wasn't right, and it started to really kind of affect me and really bother me the fact that. You don't know it could happen to other girls. And so my family, I told them like, I want to do something about it. And we did. And, you know, that's when court started and, you know, trying to get a restraining order on him.
Wow.
And so that was a lot on me at the time.
Oh yeah.
Especially cause I felt like how I mentioned, like, I felt like it was a burden.
Yeah.
Like I didn't want to be the reason like why I didn't say anything for so long is like, part of me knew that was wrong, even at 8 years old, you know, I knew it didn't feel right.
Right.
But I didn't want to like stress my family out or like, you know, stress them out or make it a problem. So I just kind of like dealt with it on my own. But yeah, around like 10 years old is when my little brother was born too. So that was a big reason why I kind of said something because didn't want anything to happen to him or that guy to still be in our home. And, so, but yeah, after that, it's like when I feel like I started I started experimenting with weed and like,
Right after all this?
Not right after, but like kind of like during the whole like court thing and like going to court and like, you know, seeing my family cry. And like, you know, I started hanging out with like the rebellious kids at school and like, you know, I wasn't smoking weed every day, but it was like, what the heck? I'll try it. You know, I'm already, you know, they tell me this will make me feel good. And like, I was hanging out with kids my age, you know, but they had older sisters or older brothers that like, smoked. And so, you know, I trusted them to like, you know,
you felt like they had your best interests at heart.
Yeah. I'm sure they didn't even know what they were doing either. You know, we were just
kids.
Took some weed from my sister, you know, like let's try it out. So, but after that, like once or twice thing, like I was like, damn, like this is good, you know. But I was still a kid, I couldn't handle it. So you know, but I think I found my way of relief and like kind of codependency. Like I started this is how I felt. Like I felt like the only man that ever or guy that gave me attention was my uncle. I want to kind of get rid of that, wash that off and kind of get attention from guys. And, you know, like, 11, 12 years old, you know, that's not something I would want my cousin to be worried about or like my brother to be worried about, you know? So that's when I feel like I started to kind of, that little switch went on in my life where like I wanted to start growing up quick, you know, and like just started hiding secrets and like, you know, just being I'm still a kid, but I didn't want to be a kid, you know, I just wanted to like, you know,
grow up.
Yeah. I just wanted to grow up and like, you know, so I definitely wanted to fit in with, crowds at school and like, just, you know, be cool, you know?
Right. You wanted validation.
I wanted the validation, and like I didn't really like, you know, now I know that it was codependency, but at the time I just wanted to feel cool. I just wanted to have friends and like fit in, like no matter what it was, you know, like whether it was being a bad kid, troubled kid at school or you know, getting straight A's, which was, you know, not what I was focused on, so it was easier to just get in trouble and like get that, you know. And so around this time too, my parents were, you know, getting stressed out with me and like.
Did they try therapy with you?
Yes. Yeah. I started therapy and I was in therapy up to like 15 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. So it did help, but I think I used more the therapy more instead of a way of like taking the tools that they would give me to, you know, work on myself and be better.
Yeah.
I used it as a venting session, yeah. Which is
I can't believe people do that.
Yeah. Right? So instead of like going in and like coming out with, okay, this is what I'm going to use. You know, she told me to like, this would help me, the suggestions. I used it as, let me just tell her all the bad things I've been doing this week that I can't tell my parents.
Right.
And like, you know, so, but yeah, so that was middle school and like okay. My parents, you know, they moved me schools, you know,
yeah.
Thinking maybe that will make it better. And you know what? It did for a while.
The geographical already.
Yeah. So that I noticed that has really helped me changing environments and okay. Like, you know, because I feel like I can adapt good to my new environments.
Okay.
Now, but you know, before, yeah, but like finding friends and like, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So going to high school, just to kind of high school, I started like, you know, really trying to fit in. High school is where I really wanted to fit in. And like, obviously you're around upperclassmen
right.
You know, and I don't know. At first I started off really good. Yeah. You know, I got enrolled in like Avid, like doing college class, like getting prepared
really?
For college.
So you did really well. Scholastically.
Yeah. My ninth grade year, I did want to do things differently. And like, I'm like, you know what? Fresh start. And like, I joined a volleyball team.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So my mom was always like really encouraging with me and my brothers to be in sports. And like, middle school, I never wanted to do that. And like, I don't know. Freshman year, I was like, you know what? Let's do things different. Let's make them proud. Let's like feel good. And you know, I wanted to be like a cheerleader. I don't know, something, you know?
So I could still only see you be a cheerleader. 100%.
I never made it, but I made the volleyball team. And that's
cool too.
Yeah, that made me happy. I played volleyball for like 2 years.
Oh, shit.
So yeah, that was a freshman, like the first half of my freshman year was a really good year.
Right.
And then things starting to go kind of left, maybe not downhill yet, but left, because I started dating an upperclassman.
Oh, really?
So that's thing about my story. I feel like it has a lot of downfalls due to needing validation and like wanting attention and just fitting in and like feeling good, like because I was insecure.
Of course.
And I started dating an upperclassman, and
what do you call it? Was he a senior?
No, he was a junior.
A junior, okay.
Yeah, but I was a freshman, so still a gap,
you know? Yeah,
and
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And he was, he happened to be like the dealer of the school, you know?
Oh, like, you had a type.
He'd smoke weed, and like, I didn't know it was my type until like, you know, I don't know.
What
I don't know
going
what it was.
On, right?
Yeah, and so then, you know, he introduced me to other friends of his, and I started getting into that crowd, you know, and like, even though I could you know, it wasn't of me. Like, if you saw me, like, you'd be like, you'd know right away, like, you don't belong in that crowd, you know? Mm. Like, that's honestly how I feel, because I feel like I've always been sweet and I've always been a kind person, but I feel like that really changed me, you know? Like, I started, he introduced me more to, like, wax pens and, like, dabs. I started, like, sneaking out dating him, so, like, it's a whole change, you know. Yeah. I shouldn't have been doing those things, you know. Like
your parents were not
aware of it, obviously they did not approve. Like I had to hide it from them for a little while, which I feel really bad about.
Sorry, mom and dad.
Yeah, I'm sorry, mom. I'm really sorry. I love you. You know what? Like I said, like. All of those things that I've been through have shaped me into the person I am today.
Absolutely.
And I'm grateful, you know, bad or good. But
so,
yeah, that was high school. And then
it was just marijuana when you were in high school?
It was just marijuana. Yeah. Marijuana and like drinking here and there. And like that was up to my like sophomore year, end of sophomore year. You know, I wasn't playing volleyball anymore. I wasn't, you know, I was ditching class. I was like, you know, my parents were a little like just kind of scared for me at the time. You know, they were already worried. You know, they probably saw what it could, what it was going to lead to.
Yeah, they saw the path.
Mm-hmm. And so again, I was moved high schools, which I hated because obviously I had my friends, quote unquote friends in that friends. High school. So when they moved me, I was upset, but you know, I was like, you know what, let's make the best out of it. And
And you're still dating this guy?
I was, and I was like keeping it a secret and like, so yeah, man, I'm so bad. I put my parents through a lot, but and the reason they moved me too is because like the high school I was in, I wanted to go there, and it was really far from where I lived. But my dad, you know, he said, you know, if you want to go there and you're gonna do good, I will wake up every morning and I'll take you. And so once they started seeing the pattern, the slip ups continuously and stuff.
Yeah. They're like, hey, we can't go out of our way for this school.
Exactly. So started going to one closer to home, and you know what? It went well there. And you know what? I ended up breaking up with that guy. Okay. I started hanging out with better people.
Good.
I was still smoking weed. I think junior and senior year was like, a stoner, I guess.
Like an everyday occurrence.
Yeah. I created this like
celebrating 420.
There you go. I was like, that was like a Cinco de Mayo
that
to
was,
me.
Yeah. That was just that just happened.
I created a reputation for myself that was like, oh yeah, that girl parties a lot. That girl, but it wasn't really me, but it was me at the time, you know? And you know, it started off fun. It started off, you know, going to high school parties and drinking and having fun and like, you know, getting invited to this party and like, you know, it was fun at first. It was fun. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I didn't see a problem in it.
Okay.
And
it was innocent.
It was innocent. Yeah. Like, you know,
yeah.
Obviously my parents knew though, they kind of, you know, and so my mom was like already kind of bringing up rehab. Like,
oh
hey,
Jesus,
let's
already
get you into
that's
rehab.
All.
Yeah. And so I was very like, mom, you know, you're just, you know, it's not as bad as it looks. I'm just partying, you know, I'm just having fun. It's what we're, it's what the kids are doing now, you know, like it's what we're doing. It's normal.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't see a problem in drinking or in smoking weed, you know, or like, so that was like, I was happy, I guess. I was, I thought I was happy. You know, I had good, you know, they were good friends, but obviously they were, you know, drinking, smoking, but they weren't like getting me in trouble. You know, they I felt happy with the people I was friends with. Mm-hmm. But I was also kind of in a way hiding it from my parents that they started to kind of gain trust. And my grades were good. See, I was, I was getting good
grades.
You had
a good surface going
on. I got it. You know, I'm like, okay, my grades are good.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grades are good. I'm not getting in, I'm not talking back to my parents. I'm doing okay. It's okay, you know, for me, it was okay for me to, you know, drink and smoke behind their back. Yeah,
treat.
It, you know, it's, I'm not hurting anybody.
Right.
So, you know, and obviously, you know, I'd still have like, you know, just like every teen and, you know, child has arguments with their parents and, you know, snickers. That's what, you know, what was going on. And at the time I was very, you know, I made a deal with myself that I'm going to move out as soon as I turn 18. I can't deal with this. Yeah. You know, I was just really ungrateful. You know, I, now that I see it, I was just really ungrateful. And, you know, my parents were just looking out for me, you know. And so
they wanted your best interest.
Yeah. And so when my father found out that I was smoking weed, he was like, you know, you need to get out of the house. But it was out of anger. You know, I knew it was out of anger.
He felt hurt.
He was just hurt and he didn't mean it. You know, it was just out of anger because I've had fights like that with him before. Where he'd be like, you know, by 18, I want you out of the house. And it was just out of anger. And, you know, we'd always, you know, talk about it after. And like, but that day, you know, that, you know what? A lot of people say that weed isn't a bad thing or like soup. But for me, it got to a point where I left my nest that I was being taken care of and like, provided for and like because I wanted to keep smoking weed that now I see why it's a problem and why my mom always told me it's a gateway drug. You're gonna, you know, you need, like when she would tell me like, because I wasn't doing, you know, I'm an opioid user. I became an opioid user, and I was using meth. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you know, I was just using weed and like maybe coke here and there at parties.
Yeah, like a little, yeah.
Here, so, here. But help yourself. Wasn't like, I wasn't like, it wasn't how it was a year ago for me, you know? It was just for fun.
It progresses.
It progresses, yeah.
And like you're kind of pretty much sabotaging your future in small little ways.
Yeah. Definitely.
Know, by like saying, well, I'm gonna piss off my parents by smoking weed, but I'm gonna still do it.
Yeah. And like at this time I could have been learning how to drive. Like
learning
how to drive, getting my license. And those are things that I feel like I lost the opportunity to like do. No, I didn't lose them. You know, I'm still working on those now. But
because but at the time you could have just got it out of the way.
Yeah, I could have got it out of the way. I had the support. I had all of the support, you know? And so I started when my dad found out, my parents found out I was smoking weed, they said, you know, if you're gonna keep doing this, we don't want you here.
Yeah.
And obviously that should have been an easy decision for me to I'm gonna stay home, you know?
Right.
But I guess it was easier for me to leave. And so by this time I was already graduated from high school.
Okay.
So I was 18 already.
Okay.
And so I packed a bag of clothes.
Oh no, you packed your shit.
Yep. I took the
shit, dude. Hell yeah.
And I left and I didn't come back, and they thought I was going to work, and I did go to work that day, but the day after
work,
I did not come back, man. And so yeah, that was that day, honestly, is a day that I don't like to remember, because I remember getting a call from my mom like a couple hours after she knows I get off work, and
yeah, she's worried about you.
She kind of, I could hear it in her voice. She's like, "Where are you?" And I was like, I'm not coming back. And I was scared. Don't get me wrong, dude. Like, I was really scared. I can't believe I'm doing this. Like,
young 18-year-old girl.
Yeah, I was like, I'm 18. I'm an adult. You can't. And, like, there was a one time, previous time, I was, like, maybe 16, where I tried to run away from home.
Oh, okay. Like, it was
they picked up the phone, called the cops, and they found me, like, within an hour.
You ain't going nowhere.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, 18, I was like, I'm 18. You can't call.
Yeah,
so mean.
Yeah.
You're a little
defiant.
Yeah. Yep. So I put up a fight. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. All I was going to ask, where were we going to go?
I didn't have a plan or anything. What'd you expect? I probably had, like, few hundred, not even dollars in my account.
Hell yeah, dude.
So my plan was to couch surf. It was free. It was a night, you know?
Like, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's your plan.
That was my, honestly, I didn't have a plan. I just knew that, like,
catch you at your house tonight.
As long as I could. As long as I had weed and that was, and it's crazy. I don't know that I was thinking like that, but that I was fine with it. That's why, like, I knew, I know weed is an addictive drug, and it is, I'm sorry, like, to who doesn't agree, but I agree, you know, like, if I was, and that, you know, I wasn't willing to like.
It can be very, it's not as harmful as maybe fentanyl or like methamphetamine, but like definitely if you have addictive personality and like marijuana can be definitely very harmful, and it can, you can you know, like it's kind of even it can even be a little bit harder to give up, because it is so socially acceptable here.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially here in Cali.
Yeah,
you know, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And like it can hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Not, you know, and we're not speaking of on everyone's behalf, you know.
Yeah.
Like, hey, some people can be really successful and be happy, and they can indulge in weed, and it's fine, just like people can drink
exactly.
Like normally.
Yeah.
You know, it is possible, but yeah, if you have trauma and you're have codependency and an addiction going on in your life, it's,
yeah,
marijuana can be very harmful.
Yeah, I can definitely say now that I was an addict to it. And at the time, like, my mom would say, you're addicted to it. I'd see addiction and the word addict as something.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's only if you're like on the streets, right, or if you're smoking meth. You know, I saw it as the worst thing ever.
Yeah, like worst case scenario.
Yeah, exactly. And I wasn't looking at my life like from the reality of it. You know, I was just thinking of the fun and the moments it made me feel good.
Yeah.
And so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's how I spent the first 3 months. And
okay, house to house.
House to house. But, you know, after a while, the friends that I had, they were like, hey, you know.
Hey, what's up, man?
Yeah, like, what's up with, you know, what are you going to do, you know? And so, you know, some of them were kind of, you know, getting ready to go to college.
Of
and
course,
like,
right.
So they were kind of like, hey, you know, summer's ending. What are you going to do? And so I was living with a friend, and her mom was okay with it, but, you know, I totally kind of bullshitted them.
Right.
I told them, I gave them a puppy dog story, you know, like, my parents don't want me home, I want to go home, but I can't. The whole time the door was open for me, you know.
Yeah, you just weren't willing. I just didn't want to give up the weed.
Give up, not even just the weed, just the, you know, giving up. You know, I didn't want to follow rules, you know. I just wanted to do whatever the hell I wanted to do because I knew what was best for me, right?
Mm-hmm,
like,
of course.
My mom doesn't know what's best for me. People that birthed me don't know what's best for me. So that's how it was a couple months, and I did kind of get my shit together there.
Okay.
I was working and like I was doing good, and then I started living with my grandmother.
Okay.
That my family was a little more you know what, they were like, because when I was like those couple months that I was they didn't, you know, they did would reach out to me, but they didn't really, they weren't they got to a point where they were just, you know what, she left, had no control over her,
right,
she's gone, like they were kind of just, so at this point they were like, you know what, at least be closer to our family. And
I see. And they just wanted a presence to know you're okay.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, so my grandma rented me a room.
Oh, okay.
In her house, and that's where I think I started to really take off with things I was doing. Right. You know, grandmas, my grandma, she was really, I wouldn't say she was okay with what I was doing, you know, coming home late, but my grandma's always spoiled me a lot. So
grandmas do that.
I could never do no wrong in her eyes, you know? So when I started living with her, and you know, I was still working and stuff, but so I met this guy on the streets.
Okay.
And it was like another regular day going to work, and he was young like me, and like you know, he looked young and and he was homeless. And so I just felt bad seeing him, and like, you know, I was you know, how could he be homeless, like he's so young, and like, so my intention was to help him. And so I did, I started talking to him, like, you know, how'd you become homeless, and like, you know, he's telling me what it happened, and like he mentioned fentanyl. He's like, I'm addicted to fentanyl, and I didn't know what that was at the time, like I didn't know anything about it. And so we start, you know, I started hanging out with him after work, and, you know, I just wanted to help him, and like, you know, I felt like he didn't have friends, so I wanted to be there for him. And slowly I started to, like, you know, have feelings and like,
oh really,
for him. And the time I feel like that we met, you know, I was like,
you felt like you could relate a lot to him.
Yeah I felt like I could relate, just in the fact that like we both were on our own so young, and like, you know, and I felt like I wanted to be loved, you know. I'm like, I can have a boyfriend now, like, you know. My parents were strict on like having, you know, they weren't strict, they were just wanted to meet the guy, and they wanted for them to be a good guy for me, you know,
understandably, and like, especially after what happened to you when you were so young.
Mm-hmm. And like, obviously they wanted me to be influenced, right? And so I started dating this guy, and I thought I could help him, and you know, and
that's a thing too.
Yeah, I thought I could change him. Like, could change his addiction. I could take him away from that. And
he'll put down a fentanyl and he'll be the right man for me.
Green flag right there.
Shit.
That's when the went. So thank you for that.
Yes. Anytime.
Yeah, so in the process of trying to fix him, I dragged myself with him, you know? Like I lost myself and so I started to, he was on the streets. He had nowhere to take me. I couldn't bring him to my house because my aunt was, one of my aunts, my aunts lived with my grandmother. They didn't want a random guy there.
Of course not.
When you see him, you could tell he was.
He was obviously homeless and on fentanyl.
Yeah, yeah. So.
So awesome.
And I was like.
I found a boyfriend.
Yeah. Where'd you meet? So we started dating and, I started slowly, giving up on work, not going to work.
Okay.
Spending all my money that I had saved up because I really wanted to save for a car. Like, I was on a good path. I went, I enrolled myself in college. Like,
oh, no shit.
To me, that was a.
Yeah, that's good.
A good, goal that I accomplished because I didn't want to go to college after my parents' home. I was like, I'm 18. I can do what I want. I don't have to go to school. And so.
Yeah, it was like a burden.
Yeah.
More than anything.
But then when I moved to my grandmother's house, I think that there was a flick in my brain that I'm like, I want to, I started to kind of feel my parents' pain and my family's pain of seeing their only daughter just leave at such a young age, especially knowing like I didn't had nothing set up for myself, So
did you have any aspirations of doing anything like with education? Like,
so, so I did want to follow the steps of my mother into becoming a nurse.
Oh, I see.
Helping people. I've always wanted to be a counselor. That's something that I think is because I started therapy for so long and I saw like.
You have the experience.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So that's always a counselor, what I wanted to be, or helping kids, or like a social worker, because I went through those a lot, you know, especially with what happened to me as a kid.
Right.
And just, I didn't feel so alone with them, it was a kind of a embarrassment for me to say out loud that this person did this to me. Mm-hmm. So they made me feel like I wasn't alone, and they made me feel like a normal kid. Like there was nothing wrong with me because of what I've been through, And so that's something that I wanted to give to others, So there was that. And so then when I started dating this guy and I got, love bombed and just, I thought I could change everything. And so then
absolutely.
I let everything go and like I had no more money to go to the dispensary. That's where I was getting my weed. So my next option was because like I'd see how he would get smoking fentanyl.
Yeah.
So for me, I was scared, I was like, I still had fear, so. I was introduced to methamphetamine.
No shit.
And
so did he have the meth on him or was it just somebody else?
You know what? He was just smoking fentanyl, but we were hanging out with other people in the streets. We both got introduced to that at the same time.
Okay.
So everything was, it was not good, but we were, getting along, like, this is fun, taking the train to like the beach and just me smoking my weed and like, just, we were in love, and like, so we got introduced to methamphetamine. And
so that was the something that you both can do together and kind of bond. Maybe.
Yeah. Once I started smoking meth is when we kind of both started like, because I didn't really enjoy being hanging out on the streets, but until I started smoking meth,
it makes it
you
could be anywhere. adventure.
Exactly. So the first time the first time I tried meth, I was hooked on it. Like,
wow,
it was an instant, like, like, I loved it. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, I want to do it every day. And like,
I was just.
And so then we started to have DV going on and like, you know, like, you know, with the highs comes the lows of smoking meth. And so you know, my anger and like, I had a lot of impulsive, you know, like not spasms, but you know, when you just tantrums, you know, just started to get really ugly between us. And but it also felt like he was like, at that point I was like, I was very codependent, you know, like, so then when like, you know, I started doing meth, and then there was a day where I was curious about fentanyl, you know, so I gave it a try. And the first, I overdosed the
first time. Oh my God, dude.
Yeah.
What? You like, OD'd the first time you did it.
Yep, exactly. And you know, that should have been a scare for
that
me.
That should have been a fucking flag.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah. And it did
they
scare
me. At you?
Yeah. God yeah, damn. Like four times.
Four canisters?
Yeah. And I guess some other thing had happened while I was like, I had torn my esophagus, so I had to go, I had to get hospitalized. So
oh,
I was,
God damn.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, but I won't lie, that day that I tried it, I did like it. I was like, oh, this feels good. Like, I was like, this is different than meth and weed. This is like crazy. Like, but I overdosed. So, you know, so I did.
Their first opiate, it was just hooked.
Yeah. And like,
hooked.
Yeah. And, so I went a couple months without using it and just smoking meth and just doing other random shit on the streets. Like I thought, like, as long as I don't do that, I'm good, you know? Okay, and so then
you gave fentanyl a try, you OD'd, and then they're
so
like,
maybe not, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then my uncle passed away.
Oh, shit.
And during this time, like
the same uncle that
no, this was a different uncle.
Okay.
No. Not the same person.
Okay.
But this time I was already like, I was hanging out on the street. I was sleeping on the streets. Like, you know,
shit.
I had a home, but I chose the streets,
you
know,
that,
to be with this guy. And like,
right.
You know, I thought,
was it like tent situation or?
Yes. Tent or like, sometimes we just like, you know, deal with the fucking cold and sleep behind a dumpster or like, you know, or like
wherever could kind of,
wherever there was a warm little spot I didn't, you know,
yeah,
or I'd, you know, go home and like grab blankets and bring them out and like my family wouldn't hear from me for weeks sometimes, you know. I always tried my best to like, especially
avoid
on my not avoid them of yes that
mm-hmm.
especially when I was on the streets, you know, because we lived in, you know, it was a small town.
Vista.
Yeah,
yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah,
you know, my brother would be driving around sometimes. He'd see me and, like, drive right past me sometimes, you know? But, like, I'd always, like, my grandma, like, she was always super worried about me and, like,
mm-hmm.
she cared about me, you know? So, you know, you know, you'd hear left and right people, my family telling me, like, you need rehab. You need to leave this guy. You need to come home. Like, and my grandma was always, like, you know, she knew I needed it, but I think my grandma, she is a very sweet lady, and
mm-hmm.
she was more like, you know, as long as you're okay, you know, every time I show up, she'd give me a burrito, like, she just, she knew that. And then also speaking of my uncle, which is her son, Noel, rest in peace, uncle, I love you.
R.I.P.
He was also in his addiction, and he
God.
Had been dealing with it for, like, all his life.
Yeah.
And so I felt like she really understood me, my grandma, even though, like, you know, she was, she was old school and, like, didn't believe in addiction or, you know, probably doesn't, you know, but she understood what I was
going through
and knew that I was still a good person, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
like, even with my uncle, you know, he, you know, I grew up seeing him in his addiction and, you know, starting fights and, you know, getting arrested at my grandma's house and just doing stupid things and getting hurt. And anyways, he died with a bottle in his hand. And
Jesus.
So after that, I, you know, my family tried to get in contact with me because I would charge my phone whenever I could. And like, you know, when they called me and told me that he had passed away, I was just in so much disbelief. Like, yeah. I had just saw him like the week before. And like, he also really understood me, you know,
yeah,
like,
of course.
Once my family was kind of, you know, I was, you know, always a sweet Amy, oldest, you know, the only, the oldest grandchild. And, you know, yeah. I was like, you know, a sweet girl in their eyes. But when they started seeing me like turn into like this homeless girl and like doing meth and, you know, skinny yeah. bones and, you know, they were kind of like, whoa, like, you know, and like he started to see that too. And
yeah,
even though he was going through it too, you know, he'd try and help me out. Like, hey, you know, your parents love you, you know, maybe try rehab. And, you know, like, so I had a lot of love for him because, you know, I could, you know, talk to him about what I was doing and not be judged or, you know, like, so when he passed away, that really affected me. And like, I started just, he overdosed on fentanyl. Like, we later on found
out. That's how he died.
So, but we didn't know, I didn't know that before. Yeah, at the time. So,
it just was obvious he died from drugs.
From drugs. And, you know, cause that's, you know, how they, I didn't see him, but, you know, that's what my grandma said. And, you know, that's what happened. So, so shortly after that, I did start doing fentanyl again. And I was, you know, I was started little, you know, slow dose. And like, I had no idea
ease
what the heck I was doing. Yeah, ease my way into it. And like, I just kind of tried as an escape, you know, as an escape. And like, I was so hopeless. You know, I was super hopeless. I felt like I was so codependent to this guy. I felt like he was my world. He was the only person. Like, I feel like I was just it's okay. I feel like I was just completely, I wasn't me. I was his puppet. And I just feel like I was, you know, and so I started doing fentanyl and that's when
things went downhill. Things went
really downhill. And like, when I started doing it, like, I thought I could cheat my way into out of being an addict. Like, I'm not going to be addicted to it. Like, maybe one here, there. No. Every day I'd be like, hey, can I have some more today? How about today? And, you know, he would tell me, you're going to get addicted. Like, you don't want. And I'm like, no, you're not. Like, I'm only taking.
So he saw the pattern.
He saw the pattern.
I think you're going to get strung out.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. And so. Yeah, that's what happened, and my life just started into a tornado. And there is a time too where I was out on the streets, and I was arguing with him, and I was really high on meth, and I got hit by a car.
Oh, and fuck! You did?
Yeah, I was like, I'm really surprised that I lived. Like,
really?
Only because like it was bad. Like, it was. Like, this is what I am told, because he was there to witness it.
You don't even recall it.
I don't, because I don't even feel getting hit by a car. Like, I feel like that's how.
You just woke up.
I just woke up and my ankle was like here and my shoe was off. Oh, I had my scratches all over my back and like
my. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was a scary moment. And
holy
yeah, so that also put me, that kind of halted my addiction,
because
I had to go home,
of course,
get taken care of, because I couldn't walk. And so my mother and my father were taking care of me and taking me to my appointments and, you know, getting better. And I had also had MRSA spurts. How do you say it? Like, awaken, because I'm told that it's most likely because of the meth.
Okay.
That it's more related in meth users to have MRSA.
So I was going
through it. And like, during
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I was like, so that really stopped. But
it
like,
so in a way, it was kind of good that.
Yeah.
That
you it was.
Were
it
in
was.
The hospital and then they found that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then after, as soon as I think this happened a little before I started. Yeah. A few months before I started doing fentanyl, because No, I would have remembered detoxing off fentanyl.
Yeah, yeah, so absolutely. You remember those.
Yeah, that was before. Yeah. But then that, yeah. So then my, fast forward, my uncle passed away. And like, okay, that's when I started doing fentanyl. And like, okay, so yeah, there's definitely a lot of things like that I, like I'm talking about right now, and just things pop up that I'm like, whoa, this was, that should have been my rock bottom. This should have been my rock bottom. But you know, you never know when you're going to hit your rock bottom. You know, it could be something as light as just, you know, being hungover and you're like, you know what, I'm done with this, or getting hit with a car, you know, like, so
that's a decent rock bottom right there.
So, yeah. So oh, during Jesus. My, all the, you know, what was going on with my uncle, you know, having a, you know, we had his memorial and all that, like I missed his burial because I was getting high. Yeah. And so at the time, you know, I could still be aware of like, why am I doing this? Like, this is not what my uncle would want. This is not what, you know, what it, I'm not like that. I should have been there for his, like, the things, you know, his fight. I did get to see him and say goodbye, you know.
Okay.
But like, just little things like that, that I know that now, and like the girl I was before, like as a little girl, that meant so much for me to be there, you know, like,
yeah.
So, you know, yeah. So that's when I started kind of to kind of, get, a little bit with the idea of, you know what, maybe I need to get clean or just stop or that, something, you know? And I didn't really know much about recovery, you know, like, and
but
I,
you had a desire.
I had a desire to at least stop. You know, at least stop cold turkey or something, you know, just go back to how I was living. But I couldn't, like, even like if I tried, like I couldn't stay home. Like I had to be out on the street. Being on the streets, I feel like it also is addictive. Just being around the.
It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. Yeah. Like just being around. I felt good being around people that also didn't care about, you know, like they're, you know, not they didn't care, but, you know, they didn't judge me. I felt, you know, at the time I felt like, that's my family.
Right.
That's
how
I felt.
Absolutely.
Like, and then like, that's, you know, and like, you know, I forgot about the family that really, you know, loved me. And that, so
absolutely.
At this time too, my family was not talking to me anymore. They were I was doing my thing and they were doing theirs. And it was like, I never existed in their lives. You know, I did like, I know I hurt them. It was always, I was always really aware of that, but I just didn't care. You know, I didn't care. I was, as long as I was getting high and like around the people I wanted to be around or felt good around, I didn't care, you know? And yeah, I looked terrible, dude. I was like a walking dead person.
Right.
I felt dead. I felt so disconnected with everything, my spirituality, friends. I didn't care who saw me on the streets. I didn't care. You know, I was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was never me, you know?
Yeah.
That was never me. And I didn't, you know, God was never a thing in my life. Mm-hmm. Only when I really needed him, you know? Only when I was like dope sick or, bail me out of it or going to jail, you know? Like for DV, you know, I've never been to, well, I have now, but before, like, I was like, wow, I'm going to jail. Like, you know, it would be for like, you know, domestic violence or like, you know, one time it was because I was, you know, I'm sure my parents felt dangerous around me.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know, man, I put them through a lot. And like,
yeah,
I hated them for putting me in there, but
it
made me realize, you know, even if it was just for the night that I was in there, it put something in my head that, like, I don't want to do this my whole life, you know?
Absolutely.
But, you know, it was the same thing. I'd get out. I wasn't in there for that long, you know? I'd be in there. The most I was in jail was probably, like, a week, you know? Okay, but, in my addiction, after that, it was just, okay, I'm out. Mm-hmm. Now let's figure out a way to get not caught or just chill more, you know? Or, you know,
I'll do better at getting high.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's how it was for a long time. Well, not a long time, but it was a long time. It was about 2 years that I kind of lived my life like that.
Yeah.
Now, knowing nothing about my family, not being involved in their life, it was like, you know, I never thought I'd get to that point, you know? And it was all about me and this guy and this drug, you know, me, right. this guy and this drug. If I don't get, if he doesn't get clean with me, I'm not going to do it. You know, it was, man, I didn't put myself first, you know?
Absolutely.
So, sorry.
You're good.
I didn't put my, I'm sweating over here.
It's cool.
I didn't put myself first. I didn't think about putting myself first. I was just.
Your life revolved all around with fentanyl and being with this
yeah.
man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Being with this
all,
man.
All or nothing.
Yeah. And I didn't care. Like, I knew I was slowly fucking myself up with, like, especially, like, smoking meth. Like, I feel like, I'm going to be honest. Fentanyl, I did, you know, I don't want to say I liked it, but, you know, I liked it, but I was already physically dependent on it.
Yes.
That I couldn't stop.
Yes.
With meth, I feel like it was always a really, I mean, I was still physically dependent on it, of course. Not, you know how you don't get withdrawals from going.
No, not typically.
Not typically, you know.
So, sleep a long time.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you just, you're on a rage, you know. Right, and
that,
so
that too.
I was just like, I knew like every time. And then, you know what? So there was a, when was the first time? So the first time that I went to rehab, honestly, I went because, yes, I was tired of the life I was living. I was really tired of it. Like, it wasn't in my mind, I want to get clean because I want a good life. It was because I was getting tired of not being able to eat when I wanted, not, you know, sleeping on the floor, you know, and it was crazy because I could have gone home, but I just couldn't, you know, like I needed something more. So I went into rehab, and it was also with the promise of, like, he told me he would get clean. So I was like, yes, aww, we're going to have a good life. You
it's
know?
So perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. You know, yes, I'm finally going to, you know, all of this for something. I knew it.
Did he also go?
Nope. No. Nope. Nope, he did not.
Dang.
So
okay, so you went, but you went to treatment.
Yes, I went to treatment, and that's when I got my first taste of recovery. Not going to meetings, but getting introduced to AA meetings.
Yeah.
And so I felt good. I felt good during those times, but it did it after I was out, you know, I just wasn't ready.
That happens.
It happens, you know, and my second time, I forgot what made it, you know, what was the reason I went in, but I went, you know, but of course it wouldn't work after, but I would get these seeds planted in me, you know, I would always take something with me and I would remember it, you know, and it's like, you know, that saying of, like, you know, your belly full of liquor, but you're
Head full of AA,
you know, that's how it felt for me. Although I didn't understand, you know, the only times I had that taste of recovery was in rehabs.
Yes.
So it was, still did something to me.
I see.
And so by the third time, like, after the second time that I left rehab, I went all the way to Hemet for recovery.
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me this.
And I had left rehab. I just left. I didn't want to be there. I left.
Okay.
And I made my way down to San Diego.
Okay.
And I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell anybody. And I was planning, you know, to get back into a rehab.
Okay.
You know, because this is where the, you know, the insurance was that I go to that, you know, enlists me in it. So that was my plan. And I didn't want to worry my parents. But honestly, I had that in the back of my head to, hey, I'm going to go on a little binge, you know, and then I'll go back to recovery, you know?
I see.
So, I did, and I was, you know how they say your stomping grounds?
Yeah.
So I made, city called, Old Town.
Oh, shit.
Old Town became my stomping grounds, and I started meeting people out there. And
God, really?
Yeah, and I was.
I used to work in Old Town. Oh, God,
yeah.
Dope.
It's crazy out there. And I relapsed back on fentanyl.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
During this time, I think I had already started, like, Suboxone and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But I was, you know, obviously I didn't have my, you know, so I said, fuck it, I'm going to get high, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I started that binge lasted for like maybe a week or two, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And, during that week or two, I was also, I just started doing everything. I started doing meth. I started doing fentanyl and whatever just you get anything. Your hands on. Yeah. And, I got arrested and because I was being scandalous. I was being scandalous. I was high and I didn't want to go back to jail. I was like, no. Uh-oh. And like literally the next day I had told myself, I'm going to go to a rehab because I started shooting up meth. And that's something I never thought I'd do.
Oh, yeah.
Never. And
I
started doing it and I liked it and but at the same time that it scared me, I was like, no man, I can't do this to myself. Like, and I was like getting warts on my fingers and like
it gets ugly.
I do it so much and I think that's why I was throwing those scandalous. I was so high and I got arrested and I didn't want to get arrested and I literally begged and pleaded the officers to like let me go. I was like, please, like, I'm going to go to rehab tomorrow. I just got out of rehab, you know, telling them all they want to hear. And please don't take me to jail. Please, my mom's worried about me. Like, of a sudden, my mom's worried about me. Someone's worried because I had not told my family anything. Like, they thought I was still in rehab, but I think they found out, you know, because I wasn't responding. And, you know,
They're putting it together.
Yeah. So they took me to McAllister's.
No shit.
McAllister's to get, it's like kind of like a a straight detox. It was just like, you know, and so it wasn't terrible because I was on meth and not fentanyl. Well, I was smoking more. I think because of the Suboxone, the fentanyl wasn't super addictive. You know? What it was because I feel like I would have. Yeah, it was like kind of wasn't as harsh, the withdrawals.
I see.
But, so, yeah, I went there and I was able to be let go the next morning if I, if I acted right, I guess, and if I was good.
Right.
So I put up, you know, I didn't put up an act, but I really wanted to get out of there, you know. So I was like, okay, I'm going to behave and and not give him any trouble and just sleep it off. And the next day I was let go and obviously I didn't go through with my plan. I was just getting high and, honestly, I was getting high, shooting up, and I say that because I was just, I'm still in disbelief that I ever did that, you know, and like, I just hurt, it hurts me.
You're hitting on it.
It hurts me for my family
right.
that they have to think about that, you know, like I love my family and I just, now that I'm, you know, I'm clean, I just hit my 9 months.
Yeah. 9 months.
Yeah. Okay. I can now kind of put myself in their shoes and see, wow, like, you know, and, you know, I've had friends in recovery that relapse and it hurts my heart, you know, it's like, I started doing that and then a miracle happened. So I was hanging out with the, you know, people on the streets and this guy came through with a bike and I've never seen him. He was, you know, just another guy out there, you know, he's like, hey, are you from Vista? And I was like, you know, I was in Old Town, so I was like, who knows me around here? No one. So I was why? And he's like, your mom is looking for you. And I was like, stop, like, no, you're not. He's like, yes, you look like the picture she just showed me. Oh. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, that's when I started to, you know, not freak out, but just kind of like my mom, you know, she came looking for me. And he's like, yeah, she's over there. You know, I told her if I see you, but I've never seen you until now. And I think that's just crazy, you know. And I was like, so then there's another woman there and she's like, here, use my phone and call your parents. Call your mom. Okay. Like, and I didn't want to. I was like, no, I was going to hide or just.
Right, of course.
And, you know, I guess they were, you know, they did have a little bit of good intent for me. And they're like, call her, you know, you're too young, call her. And So I called my mom and right away, Mija, where are you? Please, I want to see you. And
okay.
I just, you know, I was like, okay, you know, it broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was dirty, man. I was wearing like, I had lost my clothes. I was
whatever you could find.
Whatever. So I was just wearing like, whatever. I found it on the floor, and so I was like embarrassed and like, gosh, I don't want to see her. But
right.
I still saw her, and like, she came with my aunt, who's also a big, big person that has really supported me in my recovery and been there and not left me, you know, and mm-hmm. like when I wasn't a good person in my mm-hmm. addiction. And so they asked me if I want to go to rehab, and you know, I was so strung out. I was like, no, this is like I had made a decision that this is what I want to do right now.
I see.
I can't get clean right
All
now.
In.
I already tried it. Might as well party till I can't no more. That's right. How I felt.
Right.
But I also had that side of me like, Amy, no, don't do this, you know, like please don't do this to yourself. And I was like, no, mom, I don't. And I was really mean to my mom, you know, mm-hmm. and I wasn't. Yeah. So I was not thinking clearly. And I'm so glad I was kind of aware of that. That I wasn't. So then they call my father, and I'm a father's girl. I love my dad. And I feel like he's the only man that I'll be ever okay with getting his validation. And I say that in a good way, because he's very supportive of me, and he has best interest in me.
Yeah.
So he calls me, and you know, I haven't spoken to him in a while, and even though I was in rehab, he didn't want to talk to me because, you know, I had a pattern.
Yeah. He was hurt.
He was hurt. And so then he talks to me, and I was like, hi, you know. And I just told him flat out, I don't want to go home anymore. I'm gonna be out here, and this is what I want. Just leave me alone, please.
Yeah.
And in my head, I thought if I push them away, I can't hurt them.
Right.
They'll be okay. Yeah, but obviously, like, it's gonna hurt them more. And so
of course.
All he tells me is like, so you're gonna leave again. You're gonna leave me again.
Uh-huh.
And you know, obviously he was talking about when I left home.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're gonna do this to us again.
Yeah.
And that kinda switched something in me, and I was like, man, like, I can't do this to him anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so I got in the car and I told my mom, take me home. Okay. And she tried to take me to get into a rehab.
Yeah.
And it was too late. They had closed. Okay. But I stayed the night at their house.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to lie and say I stayed clean, you know. I did use, and so... But the next day, my mom brought me all the way back over here, and she got me into rehab, and I've been clean ever since, and I'm really thankful, because I felt like they had really gave up on me, and so I just decided to do things really different this time.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 3 months in rehab.
Okay.
Instead of just a month or whenever I felt ready.
Three months, solid time.
It's a solid time, and you know, I feel like I really learned a lot, and I really try to soak everything in.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to keep hurting them. And I was also tired of the relationship and the relationship that I was in, the relationship I had with myself, and the relationship I had with my family. So I really told myself I'm going to do it all or nothing. And thank God. And it had been my second time at that rehab. So, you know, I had people there that also supported me, counselors, and that really wanted the best interest in me. And, you know, so I stayed there for as long as I could.
Uh-huh.
And 3 months was as long as I could. And I got into a outpatient program after that.
Okay.
And I got into a sober living
that
I'm really, really happy that I'm in, because honestly, those girls have kept me clean. They're really helpful. I've never had that.
Support system.
Support in people that are not related to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm really grateful. And I've been, you know, I put it all or nothing. No more 1 foot in, 1 foot out, you know?
Yeah.
I got me a sponsor, which is, she's great.
Oh, yeah. I love her.
She's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Donna, I love you.
Okay.
And, yeah, so I've been, you know, and I, you know what, I still have my bumps, but you know what, I have, yeah. I don't pick up no matter what, and hey, I made it through my 21st birthday without drinking.
Yeah,
and
like, I'll give you one more. I'll give you one more of that. That deserves one.
So
fucking awesome.
Yeah, I've been July 14th, 2023 is my sobriety date, wow. And I'm really thankful, and you know, I have a long way to go, and
yeah.
But I'm happy with where I'm at. I'm happy with, you know, I'm thankful for recovery. I'm thankful for AANA. I'm so thankful for it because it has shown me a new way, you know, like
absolutely.
I still have a long way to go, like I said, but
yeah.
it gives me joy, you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah. I'm really happy right now. And yeah. You know, so
well, yeah. Dude, thank you so much for coming on. If you didn't feel this, man, I mean, fuck, man, you have no goddamn soul. But like, I really appreciate you coming on and telling your story, and I just admire you really giving this all, commit, just giving it all, man. Like so young, like oh thank my god, you. Dude, like. Yeah, when I was 20 years old in rehab, but I was a piece of shit.
Hey.
And I loved it and I owned it.
Yeah.
So, but seeing you, man, like thriving is fucking awesome. I really appreciate, you know, your recovery and just, man, thanks for, you know, repping my brand as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I know you're really all about it.
Yeah. Once I saw it, I was like, cause you know what? Before I saw your brand, or maybe I've seen it, but you know what? I was always very ashamed of being an opioid user.
Yeah.
And not that I'm proud of it, but
of course,
you know what? It's not something I should be ashamed of. Mm-hmm. And your brand really helps me be okay with what I've been through, you know?
Absolutely.
And it just, you know, like in your brand recovery and the words that you just told me, it makes me feel, you know what? I'm not a bad person for what I did in my addiction, or for what I put the people that I love through, you know? And so, yeah, it helps. I really fuck with your brand. So.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, fuck fentanyl.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you again, Amy. Thank you so much.
Thank you too. Thank you.
All right. Goodbye, everyone.